everybody. Can you hear me? Everybody can hear me? Great. Okay, so I'm going to talk today about community health planning and the impact that not expanding Medicaid in our state is putting on our particular hospital. My hospital is based in Memphis, 600 plus bed facility. Is anyone familiar with the Med? That was okay. All right, so we've rebranded, so I've got some marketing slides in here. I'm excited to show them to you. But basically, we're the safety net hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. Okay, so we're going to kind of weave some things together. We're going to focus on some of the specific projects that we've done to try to offset some of the DSH dollars starting to disappear, including length of stay. These are my contributors. I've actually got one of the contributors here with me. Everybody wave. Hello. All right, here's one of the marketing slides. You can see that we've got a number of different physical spaces in Memphis. We have the main hospital downtown, but we've also got some satellite sites and that sort of thing. See? Oh, wrong way. All right, well, I'm not going to go through all this, but we are actually the oldest hospital in Memphis. We've been around since 1829. We've got a strong history of supporting our community, and we are the oldest hospital. Some of the branding that we're doing, we're not just a hospital. We're much larger than that. We are the regional leader in many of these key service lines. Trauma, burn, we're a level one trauma center. High-risk OB, neonatal services. But we're trying to refocus where we're not just for the poor. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what our self-pay charity looks like to give you an appreciation of that. Here's a nice marketing slide as well. So you've got listed here the number of positions that we have, 483 employees, how many admissions, that sort of thing. I'm not going to go through every one of them, but we did place as one of the top workplaces, and we also have received a number of other awards. Oh, yeah. All right, so Medicaid expansion. Who is in a state where Medicaid is not expanding? All right, so you guys will be sympathetic to my cause here. I'm going to go through a little bit of this. Some of this you already know, I'm sure. As you know, we had a Supreme Court decision. You guys remember that? Right? Okay, so one of the things that was not pushed forward was the pressure to put the states in a position where they had to expand Medicaid, right? So it's up to us, right? What are we going to do? Taking a look at this slide, you know, what is the matching rate? We really haven't seen anything like this in terms of what the federal government's willing to do to expand Medicaid, right, in our history. So if you look through this, I mean, you know, it's 100% until 2017, goes down to 95%, it gets down to 90 plus. So you guys understand that this is an opportunity possibly for us to expand Medicaid and have significant dollars to help us. All right, there we are. You notice, and many of you are probably from the states that are not expanding. We're not moving forward at this time. So this slide, and this is coming from the Kaiser side, but this is kind of really a critical point here. I actually teach a class, and I've got, I have two students. We're going through the Obamacare site trying to figure out where they were going to fall out. One student made something like $45,000, had one child, and she had almost a full subsidy going through the site. I had another student who was making $25,000, something like that, who had two or three kids. And when you get to it, it says, we're sorry, your governor's decided not to expand Medicaid. Are you following me? This is the poorer person who can't get any help. And so there's this coverage gap. It's the donut hole. And I'm sure you guys are all familiar with that, given what you do. So then this talks a little bit about race and ethnicity. African Americans are disproportionately impacted, and our patient population is primarily African American. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. All right. So here's kind of where we're sitting. Most uninsured Tennesseans are members of working families. They're not just homeless folks. They are working families. They are the working poor. And they're falling in that donut hole. So when you look at this, we've got 259,000 people in the donut hole. Most of them are on our side of the state. The West Tennessee portion of Tennessee is more heavily Medicaid and also more heavily indigent. Just the poverty levels in general are more significant. So what did we do? So we had this bill that was going through both the House and the Senate at the state level. And this is literally the language in the bill. It prohibits Tennessee from participating in any Medicaid expansion under the Federal Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. So we're making it unconstitutional. This is actually in the bill. This is straight out from the bill. It's prohibiting the state from establishing, facilitating, implementing, or participating in any new expansion. Okay. So we've actually put this out there as being unconstitutional to expand Medicaid or to accept anything that's coming from Obamacare. All right? These are the dollars that we're actually letting go. We're already hitting this at our hospital. $7 million we've lost at our hospital in this past year. It's just going to get worse. And I don't know exactly how we're going to sustain that. We're going to talk about some of the things we're trying to do, but it's kind of a scary situation for us when we've got our legislative process basically saying it's unconstitutional to, you know, accept any of these dollars. Now, we have recently had an election. Our governor is coming back, and so we're hopeful that maybe he wasn't helping in this regard quite as much because he was looking to get reelected. We're a heavily Republican state. Et cetera. He appears to like the Arkansas model, so I mean, maybe there's some hope there, but we are concerned. We're seeing just a gridlock that, you know, we're not sure exactly how we're going to survive, I'll be honest. So Tennessee says no. You know, they failed to reject the bill. Basically, it's going to become almost nearly impossible for us to expand Medicaid in anything that appears to link to the ACA. So there's got to be some creative other mechanism to get it through our legislative process. There's a very heavy negative attention on the ACA in the state of Tennessee. It's very negatively oriented. Very limited folks really see the benefit of it and this sort of thing. So there's a lack of education about what it really means and what it can do for the state. And then, of course, creating the right infrastructure. So the vulnerable populations for the state of Tennessee include, you know, Tennesseans who are members of the working poor, uninsured Tennesseans who do not have children, elderly, veterans, and their families could potentially be at risk. Anybody with mental illness has also been a high-risk group, and obviously rural and impoverished communities. This gives you a list of all the hospitals that are accepting DSH payments now and are becoming more at risk. We don't fix this problem. This kind of shows you the community assessment needs, kind of links back to some of the other presentation that has been done here. And we are living in a very high poverty area in certain parts of Memphis and high levels of need in terms of health disparities. This is the region. As you can see, we're 70% African American. I mentioned that earlier, just giving you a sense of the Memphis metropolitan area. Leading cause of death is heart disease, then comes cancer, just to give you a sense of what that looks like. So at our hospital, we see 28.6% self-pay. That's high, okay? Charity self-pay. And so we have to react. We lost $7 million in this past year, and so we have to figure out how to grow new service lines, figure out how to bring more revenue in, how to become more efficient, more lean, do things better, more effectively, so that we can survive in the long run. So with that said, why focus on length of stay? All right, so is reducing length of stay a good thing or a bad thing? In a hospital. Kind of like Goldilocks, right? So it can't be too short, it can't be too long, it needs to be just right. And there are national measures out there, and they kind of give us a sense of where we should be, you know, sort of an expected length of stay. And we can compare where we are by service line, by disease category, this sort of thing, and in terms of where we should be and where we are. And when we looked at this, we were high, okay? So that was one reason we were focusing on it, because we were higher than the benchmark. And for us, there are significant resources that are consumed with self-pay charity care patients. I don't think I had a full appreciation for this. I've been at this facility now for about a year and a half, and you know, you're trying to place someone who doesn't have insurance, right? So in the continuum care, they may need to go to SNF, they might need to go to a nursing home, they might need to go to rehab. And to find mental health is a huge issue, you know, we need to place them in the behavioral health organization. And how difficult it is to get these patients where they need to be has been a tremendous eye-opener for me. Because nobody wants the self-pay patient, you know, they don't necessarily want to take that on. So what we've had to do is partner with our communities, trying to either pay them something to take these, because they won't do it a lot of times for free, and or creating some of these services within ourselves. We've created our own LTAC, our own SNF. We're in the process of doing that currently. But trying to take ownership of these patients, we couldn't just let them go wherever and not be taken care of. So this is sort of the business case for reducing the length of stay. I'm not going to go through all this, but the idea at the time, and this is, I guess I submitted this abstract quite some time ago, and I've actually got updated results, but the plan was to have everything, length of stay reduced by 0.5 by July 2013. We went through the DMATIC process. For those of you who are familiar with Six Sigma, I know it's actually not a karate term. It's okay, so anyway, so the focus here was around breaking down each one of the patient groups by their major diagnostic categories, as well as how far beyond the length of stay were they, and then looking at that pair source piece in particular, and how we could help move them along the continuum. Here are the focus points that we went through as we were listening to the voice of the customer, both from the patient's perspective, the physician's perspective, that sort of thing. The driving issues were care coordination, availability of services, and the physician availability. Now, the care coordination piece is the one that links directly back to the self-pay issue that we were having in terms of moving them down the continuum. But we also had issues with, you know, did the phlebotomist come up when they should have to draw the blood to get the patient, you know, those types of logistical issues. Did the physician come when they were supposed to come? You know, or did we wait for surgery because his schedule wasn't, you know, that kind of stuff was also looked at. So this is the way we track. The green is good, you know, yellow was, you know, mediocre, I guess, and then red meant that we had a problem. You can kind of see where we were all over the place on our length of stay. We tried to do many different things. We looked at our computer systems, we looked at historical data, we had multiple multidisciplinary teams that focus on trying to reduce the length of stay where appropriate. Remember, it's like the Goldilocks. We want to make sure there's a good balance, make sure it's a good clinical decision. And then you can kind of see that we did a number of other things. So the project really ended up focusing, when it came down to the self-pay piece and charity care, that sort of thing, we ended up focusing primarily on these downstream areas. The behavioral health part, we don't have a behavioral health unit, you know, and so a lot of the indigent population has behavioral health types of issues. So we literally had to go out and talk with our partners in the community, create a transfer agreement, you know, because a lot of times they were taking up acute care beds and all of the cost of that entails, and they didn't necessarily need it. They really needed to move on to the continuum to have the safe place and the appropriate mental health care. And that was true for all of them. But what was happening, they were clogging up our beds to the point that we were going on diversion because we didn't have enough beds and capacity for other patients coming through the door. So it was really bottlenecking our system. And apparently, historically, it's always kind of bottlenecked. So the focus on the self-pay piece was around behavioral health, looking at the SNF, looking at an LTAC, and trying to understand what we could do with rehab. All right, so what you can see here is that we've got a fairly high percentage of those that are staying only long. So what we saw were the ones that were staying entirely too long, way out of whack. And these are above and beyond could just eliminate that one half day on these other things that maybe we aren't quite as on top of, like getting that phlebotomist there or getting the physician where they need to be, could also help to move patients through the continuum. So this kind of gives you a sense. We focused our efforts primarily on medicine. We've got 2 minutes, really. Okay, so, all right. Da-da-da. All right, well, this is kind of, well, this is the beginning process flow, and there's the second. You see all the reduced steps? That's the point of that. You don't have to be able to read it. All right, so we worked with our community partners. We, implemented criteria to try to move the patients through the system more readily. And we are planning for a skilled nursing facility as well. All right, so here is kind of where we are. We had significant positive impact statistically. We've got all our p-values, which I know you guys love. And then here you can see the improvement during the project. You can see the box plots and the fact that they're separated, and this is meaningful. But this is the most recent updated chart, right? And you can see how much improvement's made. So when the upper and the lower control limit are going closer together like this, what does it mean? So as you look through this, what does that mean? There's less variation, right? So you can see all that variation in terms of how we couldn't get the length of stay where it needed to be. You see some improvement through the length of stay project, and actually hardwired much of that into a much more stable environment where we have a better ability to manage length of stay. You can see improvement there. All right, and here's the financial impact, and I'm just about done. So this is all about the bed turn. So, you know, when you look at this, it's really looking at, now that we've freed up that bed, what are we able to gain in terms of putting somebody in the bed? It does assume that we have we've retrospectively looked back, and this is a fairly good number in terms of what we've been able to quantify. But even at the 1.6 million, when you're losing, you know, $7 million this year, we're looking at $10 to $12 million next year as we move forward, and we've got to do more and more of this type of work to be able to sustain ourselves. And we are worried. So the conclusion is we're not sure if Medicaid's going to get expanded. We've got to continue to get creative. We've got to get innovative. We're investing in some things so we can move our patients through the system. We are seeing our payer mix improve. So we are starting, now that we're rebranding and really focusing on doing the right things all the time, having that good experience for our patients, we're seeing a lot of improvement there. We are worried about these DSH dollars. The care to the poor is so important. And I'm not sure how to get our legislative groups and our Congress and that sort of thing to really understand how important this is and what a devastating blow this is going to have to not only our hospital, but similar types of hospitals in the states that have not expanded Medicaid. I'm really concerned about it. bless you. Right now what we're trying to do is reduce waste, become as efficient as we can, and I guess we're saying a prayer that somebody somewhere starts to see what this potentially can do to our community. Our pictures of our new, this is our rehab room, this is the outpatient surgery center, that's an actual OR, there you go, and there's my disclaimer.